And welcome to the Rise Up Reno Prevention Network show, of course, brought to you by StopAlcoholAbuse.gov. We welcome in Carla Smith. She is the executive director with the Rise Up Reno Prevention Network. Carla, welcome in.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
You have an esteemed guest this morning.
I do. A very important professional.
And his name is Rick Krause with USD 308.
I thought maybe you meant there was somebody else stopping by later. I had to be for a loop for a second there. I'm happy to be here too.
Yeah, of course, Rick, again, assistant superintendent with USD 308 here in Hutchinson, which obviously Carla, USD 308, very near and dear to Rise Up Reno Prevention Network.
They're awfully good to us. We get to be in their building, for one thing, and we work with a lot of their kids. Great students and great faculty there.
So for people who, again, this is our, fourth show. So you got one more and probably more to come.
I believe so.
Yep, we're hoping on that. But tell people what, first of all, the name used to be, because a lot of people still remember that, and then what the whole purpose, which really it's in the name, but give
That's
us some
right.
details.
Okay, we were Reno County Communities That Care. We changed it to Rise Up Reno Prevention Network, partially because we want to make sure that everyone knows that our goal is to do prevention. It's to work with drug and alcohol abuse before it becomes an issue so that we can help kids avoid those choices and just make better choices. Prevention Network kind of sums up that we like to network with all of the other agencies and entities in the community, and we're very fortunate that we have a great community to do that.
So Rick, being in the school district directly, although you're not necessarily in the classroom teaching, you're part of the administration. Before we dive into some numbers, I know you've got some percentages and ages that these kids are starting to maybe, you know, toy with some of these things, which that's a poor choice of words. But why don't you talk about 308 in itself? It somewhat mirrors most of the other districts in the state as far as percentages. But what do you see personally as an assistant superintendent with the high school students? I mean, are most everything fine, or how concerned are you that some of these abuse problems are real?
Well, it is a concern, and being in a district-level position, you get a bigger picture than just the high school, and the reason this is important to have a conversation with really all parents is we've had issues with vaping at the elementary level this year. So people make an assumption that it's just high school kids not making good choices, but the challenges our kids face day in, day out, driving the use and starting the beginnings of abuse very early in their lives.
Carla, you've talked many times, not just in this show, but just in your job, stopping this at those early ages, like Rick said.
Right.
First of all, it begins at home. At least that's my impression.
I agree.
But teachers, peer pressure, other students, all these things, just it's a big multiplier effect, and you're trying to do it for the good.
That's right. A lot of times kids don't have the connections at home that they wish they had. I was talking with an adult today, and she said that she was the middle child out of five, and she just didn't feel like she had a purpose. And I thought that was kind of funny because she's, you know, a very professional adult that's, you know, doing fine in her life. But she used to think that being in the middle of that many kids gave her some anonymity, that she could go do things and try things and get into things that maybe she wouldn't have if she'd had some more parental, you know, somebody paying attention to her. And I think that lots of kids can find loopholes where they can get out of their parents', you know, control. They can get outside of the boundaries they're supposed to be in. So parents do the best they can. And some of them do great. And some of them really struggle because they're doing the best they can with everything else too. And so those parents need some backup, and they need not just, you know, great teachers and great faculty, but also mentors, somebody from church, a neighbor, anybody who steps up and makes a relationship with a kid is going to give them protective factors that are going to keep them from making bad choices at times, maybe recognize that somebody might see them, just feel better about themselves. So those are all great ways for kids to find that balance that they need.
Rick, my wife and I should mention, I haven't done this before. My wife is actually on the board of Rise Up Reno Prevention Network. Carla, maybe I should have said that earlier, but I never have.
That's okay.
So, Rick, we had the pleasure of pulling the trailer, the float, in the Christmas Day parade. Oh, I think there's probably 15 of these kids from high school to middle school. I don't think there are any younger ones than that.
No, mostly middle school.
Really good kids, Rick. And, you know, they're just goofy kids, just like we all were, but pretty passionate about this cause. What does it mean to have Rise Up Reno Prevention Network in the school system?
Well, it's huge. You know, any sustained change at the kid level is driven by kids. As adults, we can preach all day long about what the good and the bad is, but adults are supposed to preach. And for a lot of our kids, they get preached at all the time. And we're just one more voice and a lot of voices trying to tell them what to do right. It's when kids take the initiative to say, this is something we need to take ownership of and be creative in their and how they choose to reach out and talk to their peers. And you know, that's the influence that is going to be most impactful is at the kid level. And have an organization like Rise Up Reno who's helping to coordinate or align practices with research and with best practices really gives our kids more power to make sustained change that are positive for everybody.
What do you think about these kids that are involved in this specifically? I know you know them. Obviously, you know, they want to make an impact. They go, at least the high schoolers, go to these lower grade school kids. And obviously, from what you just said, they're making an impact.
Absolutely. You know, my son, as a senior, is not in Rise Up Reno, but he has talked about how when he's gone to elementaries and just he's been kind of in awe that they think he's really cool. You know what I mean? And that's because he's just older, but he's still, quote, in that kid mode. He's not really an adult. And so I think there's a great opportunity. And then sometimes I don't know that our students really understand the impact they make as a positive peer because they kind of take it for granted. Like, well, this is what I think is important. Therefore, I just do it this way. But other people are watching. And when you're modeling good choices, people will notice. And if it seems to be working well for you, they'll make better choices.
Well, you made a great point. Parents and teachers are supposed to say these things, and Carla, you as well.
Sure.
When other students are saying it, it maybe drops the guard down that these other kids can open up and, you know, kind of get an understanding of why, you know, they know they shouldn't be doing some of these things. Mm-hmm. But when they've got the backup and somebody's got their back, Rick, well, that's important.
And it works both ways. Bad role modeling influences kids as well. And so we have to be ahead of that. You know, we've talked a lot recently about vaping and the challenges with Juuls. And, you know, kids have taken the message of this is not good any longer. And the challenges with Juuling and vaping, they're going down at Hutchinson High School. You know, well, it's not because the adults are preaching louder or harder. It's that the trendy kind of feel is going away. And other kids are like, no, we don't want to be doing this. And the other thing, which is unfortunate, that there are kids who are becoming severely harmed, you know, lung transplants and deaths, you know, they're going, wait a minute, this was someone that's my age. Some of the realities fit in as well. But, you know, you talk about peer pressure, it flows both directions, positive and negative.
Overall, vaping, I've learned this term, the kids call it using weed, smoking pot, marijuana, alcohol, Juuls, you'd already mentioned that, and all these other things. I mean, how big a problem really is it? And you've got, if you guys want to get into your statistics, Carla, one show we did that, I could not believe the young age. I mean, we're talking 5th and 6th graders, right, and when they first tried either alcohol or cigarettes. Carla, it's shocking.
Well, I think the most startling is when they start. And I don't think this is the average age for all kids, but the average age that 6th graders report that they start using is 10 and a half, which is just like 5th grade, right? I mean, that's a pretty young age. And I don't think a lot of them are, but if that's when they're reporting they're starting, they're not going to be able to stop. It's going to be something that becomes a habit and eventually possibly an addiction and definitely a problem.
Was that for vaping or?
That was alcohol.
Okay. And so I wonder if they're, you know, if they take a sip of, you know, their dad's beer, are they counting that? Not that you have getting in the weeds like that, but.
Right, right. It says on a regular basis in the questions. Right. It does. It says regularly. One of the other ways that they present some of the answers from the surveys are in the last 30 days. So in the last 30 days, how many 12th graders have used marijuana? 17%. In the last 30 days, how many 12th graders have used e-cigs or vapes? And that's almost 17%. And then in the last 30 days, how many 12th graders have used alcohol? And that's 50%, which it's not near that high up. Two, you know, like 6th graders, 8th graders, they're not going to say near 50%. But if they're starting at 10 and a half, 11, 12, you know, that's really, really young. And I don't think there's a large percentage starting at that age, but some kids are. And we're finding out they're getting it from their parents mostly, sometimes from other kids that are older or brothers and sisters, that type of thing. But if they know how to get it when they're 11, when they're in 6th grade, they know how to find, you know, a vape or something like that. They're not going to forget. I mean, that's something that they, once they're in trouble, they're also labeled, which is really hard on a kid because they have the same teachers all year and the same, you know, peers, and people are like, oh yeah, I don't want my kid playing with that kid because, you know, they're labeled. And that's a really hard thing to start at that age.
And I would say too, that the tendency then, if you start drinking at a young age, to gravitate to more challenging kinds of drugs along the way, that percentage goes way up as well. And so the importance of intervening at a young age to help kids who may dabble and experiment, which maybe is a part of growing up, but don't get into that systematic pattern of, well, the alcohol doesn't do it for me anymore.
Right.
I need something that's stronger, or I get introduced to something stronger because the people I'm around are experimenting with other types of illegal substances.
So while alcohol is legal, you have to be 21, first of all, should be responsible before you even try. But Rick, I like what you said on, I consider alcohol a gateway. I guess you can call it a drug because it does affect you, but good point on what else that brings you around as a student.
Right. Well, and the thing that Carla mentioned earlier, I want to bring back to the table, is the idea that we're not here to blame parents. And we have a lot of parents who are working very hard just to keep the lights on, working 2 or 3 minimum wage jobs as a single parent with 3 kids at home. Would the mom like to be there, to be that nurturing mom? Absolutely. Is being evicted a bigger concern? Absolutely. You know, and so we have to find other programs around, such as Rise Up Reno and other things within the schools that give those kids something to anchor to. So when they're not within the confines of our walls, that they have a voice in the back of their head going, remember what we talked about yesterday? This is not something you want to do, because they may be surrounded by 3 or 4 others who don't have that same voice, and now they're in that peer pressure situation.
Carl, I've not asked you this. Of course, Rise Up Reno Prevention Network is a great organization. You also work in collaboration with a lot of other groups, and the first one coming to my mind is Boys and Girls Club. There's also some others that the more these kids are actively involved with some supervision and their peers, there's a lot of good groups out there.
There are a lot of great groups out there. Big Brothers Big Sisters does something similar to what we do outside of school, Boys and Girls Club outside of school. So anywhere you can get kids into activities, it's going to help. Any place you can get them to be held accountable, it's going to help. So we definitely want to encourage kids to get involved, whether it's in school or outside of school. We want to make sure that they're doing something positive because they're less likely to do something negative.
Again, we're visiting with Carla Smith, Executive Director of Rise Up Reno Prevention Network, along with Rick Krause, the Assistant Superintendent for the Hutchinson School District. And Rick, these things that you and Carla are talking about, these break every socioeconomic barrier. It doesn't matter if you are dirt poor or filthy rich. Nobody is immune from these things.
Absolutely not. You know, John, I've been on before talking about adverse childhood experiences. And so you can't have this conversation without stopping and asking yourself, why are kids doing it? What is it? Is there a pain that they're dealing with from their past that, you know, the numbing effect that they may get from alcohol or from marijuana or whatever? And so if we're not actually treating or giving kids a chance to open up and heal from problems from the past, it doesn't matter how much preaching you're going to do or how much encouraging, if the pain is there, they're going to try to find a way to numb it. And so we need to find ways to continue to work with our kids through our social workers, you know, and our school counselors and programs that are character education driven that would allow kids to know, you know, it's okay to talk to someone about what happened to me before and the importance of developing their relationships. So kids feel like, you know, I'm not sure I have the support at home that I need, but this particular teacher or this social worker, I need to talk to them about what happened last night. And so as a school district, we have to build the relationships to give kids the avenues to talk about the challenges that push them down roads that make them want to do things that are harmful in the long run.
Well, and my assumption here is the kids don't want to talk about this stuff. You know, they there's a stigma associated with it. They don't want to be embarrassed. They don't want to have other kids point at them. You know, they don't want to be seen going in the social worker's office.
Well, or, you know, how do you talk about the fact that I was sexually abused last night by my uncle or by another family member, or that I was beaten, or mom and dad screamed, and you're ashamed, and you know, kids commonly find ways to blame themselves. I deserved it, you know, and so that strong relationship is the only way you're going to get a student to start unlocking some of those secrets that they bury deep, because again, no socioeconomic boundaries on that either. And so it's important that we find ways for kids, again, to feel comfortable and safe to talk about things that are harmful to them when the opportunity presents itself.
Is it reasonable to say that the school district in Hutch is dealing with that on a daily basis?
You know, it's reasonable to say to a certain extent. I don't think we call Department of Children and Families every day, but those calls are made, and calls are made home. And you do well-child checks sometimes. If we haven't seen a kid for a few days and calls on a cell phone don't go unanswered, they'll ask Hutch Police to do a well-child check and go knock on the door and find out if the student where the student is. And you know, sometimes there are logical responses because parents, they only have so many minutes on their cell phone. And when those are up and they don't get paid for another week, they don't have a phone, you know, and the kid is legitimately ill. Sometimes it's because they just haven't made it a point to get out of bed themselves to make sure their kid gets to school. Mm-hmm. And so it is a huge task. You talk a lot about test scores as opposed to data like Carla was sharing. But before you can get to the test score and state assessments, things like that, we really got to talk about how well the child is doing before assignments and tests and quizzes and are really important.
Well, and even getting a meal.
Absolutely. Right. We feed kids twice a day. And for some of our kids, that's the only two meals. And, you know, a lot of our teachers go home on Thanksgiving kind of heartbroken because they're not sure some of their kids are going to be eating very frequently. And we have a lot of community agencies that partner very well with our schools. There have been churches that have prepared boxes of food that, you know, the schools identify here are 25 families that they're not so sure the kids are eating regularly, that they'll make a difficult phone call and say, hey, we have someone who's reached out and offered this box of food. Would you be willing to take it if we deliver it to you? And those things are happening right now. Calls are being made home to try to sustain our families, at least food-wise, over the course of the 2 weeks. And people talk about, oh, we're away from school for 2 weeks. You know, what a great break. And for people, it is. For some kids, it's a harrowing experience. They don't know when they're going to eat again. Christmas is not filled with joy and love and caring. And so we have to look for ways to try to sustain kids over the break when we all should be stepping away just enjoying Christmas ourselves. But for our kids, Christmas isn't the same as it is for others.
And school, for many of them, based on what you've said, is their safe haven.
Absolutely. They come to school to be safe.
Carla, you've got some other things in front of you. I don't want to take all your time.
Oh,
here.
No, you're great. I love what Rick's saying because I think he hits the point, you know, why are kids using? And when they have those kinds of heartbreak and dilemma and trauma in their lives, they're looking for a way out. And I hear from kids who appear to be well-adjusted and doing great, even have good grades, say, I use to deal with the stress. And I don't know, I believe that Officer Fine said that was the biggest reason that people were using Juuls at the high school was that they were saying they were vaping to deal with the stress. That's why they started. And then, you know, a lot of times they can't quit. And when kids that age have that kind of stress, he's exactly right. We've got to find out what's going on or at least find out ways to help them heal. So building those protective factors, making those relationships, getting in there and being a part of their lives and giving them skills to feel good about themselves are the ways that we're going to make a difference. So it's so important.
And Rick, we humans are funny creatures. Even the students you have in 308 that have a great home life. There's no financial problems. Mom and dad are together. There's no problems. They still find a way to put stress on them, on themselves, and maybe think of Juul, you know, right. Nobody's going to find out. Right. Sneaking a beer, sneaking a bottle of wine. Right. These things happen.
Yeah, growing up has never been easy. It doesn't matter what generation you're in. You know,
That's true.
All had challenges when we were kids. The problem is now there are so many other ways that are positive and negative to find those release valves. You know, some kids it's sports, you know, some kids it's music, some kids it's gaming, you know, and all of those done responsibly will be great outlets, you know, but we need to find ways to get kids plugged into something that's constructive and positive.
So these Juuls in particular, and Carla, we've had several of your students on the early morning show talk about this, and I don't remember the exact number, but one of these little packets or whatever The pod.
Has as much nicotine as an entire pack of cigarettes.
So, Rick, when you see one of these kids with a Juul or they come in because they've been caught, I mean, do they have any idea the addictive nature of what's in these things?
Oh, to a certain extent. But, again, as stands the test of time, teenagers feel like they're a certain level of bulletproof. I mean, heck, this is just kind of for fun. I'm not going to get addicted. I'm not going to have a double lung transplant. That's not in their mind. And it goes back to why do people, even adults, abuse illegal substances, because what I'm dealing with is worse than what this might do to me for this very short period of time. So you can rationalize it out.
What about like opioids, prescription drugs? I don't think we have numbers for that, Carla, but it's a problem.
It is a problem. We're not seeing prescription drugs or opioids a lot in the schools at this point, which is wonderful.
Well, that's
means
a victory.
Prevention's working somewhere, so that's awesome. But outside of schools, the young adults and older adults as well are running into those issues. And it's an addiction issue. Once people are addicted, they just can't stop. And once they have that need, they have to find a way to fulfill that. And it's all they can think about. It's all they can do. It's all that you can focus on until you get that need met. So, you know, if mine started out with a legal prescription and then as the addiction progressed, eventually turns into opioids like heroin or something strong, something more intense or more scary than just regular opioid pills.
So Rick, School Resource Officer Fine was our guest, I think, last time. And he said that they really don't do a lot of catching of kids coming to school like inebriated or drunk. So that's a good thing. Says it does happen on occasion. But he also did talk about some of these big parties they'll have on a Friday or Saturday night, typically high schoolers. And he said usually it's somebody who didn't get invited is the one that calls and tells where the party is. And guess what? The cops show up.
Yeah.
So,
well, you know, there's two ways. Either you invite everybody or don't have it at all, one or the other.
And not having it all, at least alcohol-free, that's how you should have it.
Absolutely. That's the best suggestion.
You know, kids are going to come together. And no one's against the fact that kids can't congregate. You know, we just want to make sure they're making good choices when they do that, because peers need a place to go, especially if mom works late or dad's not around or whatever. They need to have a network that they can turn to and feel supported by.
So we've got about 3 minutes left in the show this morning. Rick, if you would, I don't know if you want to use this as a scare tactic, but it's just reality. There are consequences for kids who, you know, repeat offenders in the school system. I think you've had expulsions, not that it's that common, but do you want to talk about some of that?
Well, there are out-of-school suspensions that are in our discipline system. You know, they have a point system, and different infractions are a different number of points as the points accumulate. You know, the difference is 20 years ago when I was assistant principal at Hutch High, you know, it's 3 days out. You spend 3 days away, you come back, you're right back to class. Now, a suspension coming back to school, you have an opportunity to visit with a social worker or with a counselor. And so there is a kind of a reintegration and a conversation and maybe a little problem-solving opportunity that in the past hasn't occurred. But as we try to better understand, you know, where kids are coming from and maybe what they need to help not repeat the offense again, because simply applying consequences is not going to change the behavior in the future. So we need to be doing something to modify the behavior so we don't need the consequences down the road.
And how many parents, when you've had to call them or somebody else, they say, my kid would never do that?
Oh, it does happen. And sometimes it's like, you're calling me again. Right. And we talked last week. I mean, it is unfortunate that you get into some kids get into that groove of where, you know, they're not in a good place, you know, maybe mentally or physically, and they're making bad choices to compensate for that, and therefore they get extra attention drawn to themselves. But the good news is we have a lot more resources available to us now that we can help kids cope in a positive manner as opposed to just waiting for a punitive consequence, which was never effective, to take the place of something more constructive.
So you give them, there's a little hope involved there.
Absolutely.
That they can have a road back.
Lots of hope.
So we're at the end of the show. Carla, any final thoughts? Rick, and Rick, you as well.
I'd just like to say, whether it's whatever we're trying to prevent, any kind of bad behavior, the best thing we can do is help those kids to build some skills, give them some opportunities to use those skills, give them some recognition, let them know that we care about them and we think they're doing great. Make them feel like they have a reason to stay out of trouble. And kids can make good decisions. They are invincible. It was hard for us to make good decisions. It's every generation,
How do people reach Rise Up Reno Prevention Network?
Oh, please give us a call. We are at 620-615-4018. My email is smithca@usd308.com. Our website is riseupreno.org. And you can get to all of our links from there, all of our social media from riseupreno.org.
All right, Rick, quick thought?
You know, it's no picnic sometimes teaching and working in a school system, and we desperately need partners like Rise Up Reno and other community agencies. You talked about Boys and Girls Club, you know, and Big Brothers Big Sisters and other agencies that will come alongside and partner with us to provide the best experience for our kids, because long term, it's in our best interest to give them a high school diploma with a lot of networking and positive care and love that we can get as we, you know, shove them onto their career.
Rick Krause, thanks for your time.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
Yeah, Carla Smith, you as well, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you. Sounds great.
Yep. Thanks for listening to the Rise Up Reno Prevention Network show, brought to us by StopAlcoholAbuse.gov, and we'll see you back here next week.